It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
Welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. Matt down in San Antonio, Texas, where he watched the Super Bowl last night with great interest. I don't know if he actually went to the Super Bowl or not. We discussed that, but I think it was a little bit out of his price range. But perhaps in retrospect, it was not. Matt, how are you?
Wait, is that what we're talking about today? The Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Surprising.
You want to talk about Paul Pierce? We could start with that one.
It's a boring game. I didn't think we were talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, after when I turned it off in the second quarter, I realized that the Patriots didn't have any chance in the game. I think that Tom Brady's time has come. There's been a lot of talk about Jimmy Garoppolo perhaps being traded. I think if the Patriots could usher Tom Brady into retirement, that would probably be the best thing. Jimmy Garoppolo has a great future as the new Patriots quarterback. Coaching too. I mean, Belichick's been now to 7 Super Bowls. He's only won one more than he's lost. Patriots won this game. Wait a second. Take two.
You know what? Take two. But honestly, you know, at halftime, that's all I was thinking about was like, this week's radio show back in New Hampshire is going to be a major bummer after this performance. And I'm like breaking it down. I'm like, all right, you know, it started with the fumble when they were driving in for their first score. Turned the momentum. The offensive line didn't show up. Brady was getting
killed,
crushed the whole game.
Yeah.
They just, you know, they put it together drives, but they couldn't finish any of them.
Yeah.
Defense didn't show up. They lost the turnover game. And then all of a sudden, one of the most miraculous things I've ever seen in sports happen. They came back from 25 down to win the game. Unbelievable.
So when you look at this game, and I'm interested in hearing, you know, your perspective on, you know, being down in a game like this, and the Patriots, the effort seemed to be there, you know, pretty much. You mentioned the offensive line. I think, yeah, there was obviously problems there, but I'm not going to say the guys weren't playing hard or whatever, but there was issues with the offensive line really throughout the game. They held up a little bit better late in the contest, but Brady was getting killed throughout the course of the game. And obviously the players kept playing, and that's important. But, you know, even in the third quarter, they're being, you know, dealt hand after hand. Everything just seems like it's not going well. Gostkowski misses the extra point. You mentioned the blunt fumble. Right after that, Brady and the Patriots are driving. It's 14-0. You think, okay, they're going to punch it into the end zone. They'll be down by 7 at the half. They're back in business. Pick 6 in the other direction. And it just, the feel was all off, too. You mentioned they weren't finishing drives. Third down, the wide receivers couldn't get open. Brady would miss with the pass a little bit up or down or whatever. And it wasn't happening for the Patriots. James White, I mean, he was phenomenal. And I think that Brady's going to give him the MVP car, and he should, because that guy kept playing the entire game. He was busting it throughout the entire game. And the Patriots' defense, I thought, was great, too, down the stretch. But as a player, you're going to keep playing, but are you looking at that and you're down that many points and there's like, okay, this is, we're going to do our due diligence, we're going to finish the game, I'm going to keep my head high, but this is, us winning this game does not look like it's going to happen.
I agree with everything you just said. You know, we talked last week, two things. Actually, we talked about all three things that were really why the Patriots dug themselves into such a big hole. We talked about winning the turnover game, which they were getting destroyed in. We talked about the fumble by Blunt and the pick six by Brady in the first half, and Patriots couldn't force any turnovers. And then we talked about the offensive line, which got destroyed for most of the game. And then we talked about the Falcons defense thinking it was going to be a shootout, but the Falcons defense just showed up and was playing out of their minds for 2.5 quarters. And, you know, I think, I want to say, you know, especially the fourth quarter, I think the experience the Patriots had, the Super Bowl experience the Patriots had came into their favor. It looked like the Falcons tightened up and the Patriots just got stronger when the pressure got on. You know, the baffling thing to me was when the Falcons were up 8. I think there was like 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, maybe 4 minutes left in the game. Julio Jones makes that crazy catch to put him in field goal range.
Right.
You know, pretty solid field goal range. They kick that field goal and go up 11.
It's over.
With under 4 minutes. It's basically over.
Yeah.
And, you know, Matt Ryan drops back in the pocket and gets sacked for like a 12-13 yard loss.
Yep.
And then you have the penalty right after that pushes them past midfield out of field goal range. And it's like, if once they got in that spot, you know, if they had the composure to just play it safe, you know, make sure everybody's on the same page. Look, guys, no penalties, no turnovers, no huge plays for the Patriots. Let's just be solid here, run some clock. We kick a field goal, we win the game. And for whatever reason, they just completely imploded and let the Patriots have that opportunity. You know, obviously they had to go over 90 yards in under 3 minutes, I think, to get in the end zone for a chance to tie it. But just giving Brady and that offense that opportunity was all it took.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because there's a lot of people out there today like, you know, I never doubted the Patriots, and I think that's a little. I mean, I'm sure there's some people out there who were, you know, in it the whole time. But for me, I'm watching the game, and at one point in time did I say, you know, I pretty much, the odds were very much against the Patriots. But I kept waiting for that moment where I could just completely write them off, you know, and say, okay, this is just not going to happen. But the numbers were all kind of still there. When we had Liam, our six-year-old, was up, and I was under the gun to get him to bed. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to put him to bed if they could still win. So I kept going through the scenarios in my head. Like, you know, it could still happen. They need to do this, they need to do this. But I'm not completely writing the Patriots off. And but everything had to go according to plan. And we would go through the math. I'm like, well, they still have to stop. The Falcons can't score, you know, at all through the course of this game, the rest of this game, or the Patriots aren't going to be able to win. But it was always, like, the numbers were always right there for them, even though the probability of getting to those numbers was difficult. And that's what kind of kept, you know, me going through the course of it, is that, yeah, this is it's been a great season. It all worked out. I worked out what I was going to talk about today too, and how, you know, the Patriots, you know, get to this level each year. The Falcons were a great team. Look what they did to the Seahawks and the Packers. They were just much better team. They executed. I had it all set up. But we saw, you know, what happens when you just continue to work and you don't give up. And the numbers were still there for them.
Yeah, you're right about the numbers. When you even coming halfway through the third, when they were down 25 points, if you looked at total offensive production, total yards, time of possession, they were dominating the game. They just didn't have the points to show for it. And it's funny you bring up all those points. You forgot the one that's the most important: having the greatest quarterback of all time,
no question,
behind you coming down the stretch. The seventh time in a Super Bowl, you got to think that experience and leadership was, like I said, a huge factor. When things got tight, seems like the Patriots thrived. And there were just so many plays and so many amazing things to talk about. I think we could do like a 3-hour special on that game. Yeah. It was incredible.
Just going over the fourth quarter. I mean, you mentioned the Julio Jones catch. You got to mention the Julian Edelman play.
Oh yeah,
which was one of, if not the greatest catch I've ever seen. Just a remarkable play, and that, you know, shows a little bit of evidence that perhaps things were heading in the Patriots' direction. They go to Amendola on 4th and 3 for 17 yards. And again, I'll go back to James White again. Three touchdowns and 110 yards receiving, most receptions ever from a running back, 14. And we'll go back to the defense, too. You know, the defense played the best offense in football, arguably, outside of the Patriots. And outside of the pick six, they held them to 21 points, and they were aided with the field position provided by the LeGarrette Blount fumble. The Falcons were in scoring another of those touchdowns, and they, as good as the offense had to do, they had to be equally as good. And you mentioned forcing the sack, the forced fumble from Hightower. And Branch recovering that. And there wasn't one particular guy on defense who stood out. It was really the defense in totality that not getting a lot of credit, but a lot of credit should be given. Trey Flowers, Hightower, Branch did a great job all year. McCourty had a great game. And you could go through the entire group. The defense, people can talk about Brady, and they're 100% right. Brady deserves all the credit in the world. And I don't want to take away from Brady. But, as you do as a role player in the league, I always look for the guys who made things happen that don't necessarily get the credit they deserve. And that defense and James White, to me, should get so much credit.
I absolutely agree. And, how they do those, computer probability simulations?
Yeah, yep.
I'm curious what the chance...
99.5. It was 99.5% chance the Falcons were going to win.
I mean, they basically, once they went down 25, had to play a perfect game
right.
to win that win, and they did. And, from the losing team's perspective, I can 100% relate, because when we lost in 2013 to the Heat, when we were up 6 with 31 seconds left, I think it was like 99, it was even greater. It was like 99.8% chance we were going to win that game. So I know how that feels and how crushing that can be. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how the Falcons respond coming into next year. Does this get you down and defeat you, or do you use it as motivation like we did the following year to get back and make right by such a tough defeat?
Yeah, it's so tough to get back to the Super Bowl or the NBA Finals, regardless of having a defeat like that. But, yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of finger-pointing and looking at, what went wrong with a younger team, too. That can really define a group. With your team, there was no doubt about the championship pedigree that was there. It was, things just didn't go well. There were a couple coaching things that were wrong. Coaching things didn't go right. Kawhi missed a free throw. There are a whole bunch of different things that happened down the stretch. Ray Allen hit an incredible shot.
There's
all the things. Right, game. Exactly. Yeah, all these little
everything
things.
Everything had to go your way. You'd play perfect. And, that's what's great about live sports.
Right.
That's why live sports is like the only thing left that people don't DVR fast forward
right.
to. Because you never know what can happen.
Right, and there's a lot of people today and for the coming week are going to be upset they didn't watch that game. And not to go back to to a bad memory again, but I remember I was there that night, and the Heat fans were all leaving. They were outside the building, and once they started to come back a little bit, because you guys were in the championship that night, people started pounding on the doors to get back in. They wouldn't let them back into the arena. The fans had actually...
No re-entry.
No re-entry. Your ticket says that. And, it was people just streaming to the exits that night. And, I don't think that was necessarily taking place at the Super Bowl, but I do know a lot of people who went to bed thinking that the game was over.
I was contemplating it, I'm not going
to
lie.
I was too. I had to get up early. And again, we were struggling with, I was fighting to keep, Liam wanted to stay up the whole game. I told him he could, and then it didn't look like they were going to win. So I was fighting to keep him alive, doing the numbers. Well, it's not quite over yet. I mean, they could still come back. It's still mathematically possible.
Well, it's a great lesson.
It really is. And it's just remarkable. And, I think that we talked about this a little bit earlier on New Hampshire Now today. Everybody's trying to, to say, this is the greatest. This is the greatest win. This is the greatest championship, and so forth. And I think people should just, enjoy it. Because to me, the things that lay the groundwork for success are always kind of the most significant things. And I pointed back to, the quote-unquote Tuck Rule game, where Adam Vinatieri hit the 45-yard field goal in a blizzard. To me, that's the greatest victory the Patriots have ever had because of that situation. And it started everything for the Patriots. That Super Bowl started everything. And that's not to take away from this at all. This is excitement. It's fun. There's variables.
This one had the best circumstances surrounding
it. Right, with Goodell.
Look, Goodell and just the... You know what? You don't realize how much the rest of the country does not like the Patriots until you leave New England. I was on set, or the Spurs played on Saturday night, their last game before the rodeo trip. And so the last segment on the post-game show that I co-host, I had on all my Patriots gear because we're doing like a little quick, you know, shout-out to the Super Bowl the next day. And you know, we're live on set in the arena, and there's all these fans in the background. And I threw on my Patriots hoodie, and everybody started booing. Everybody's like, we still love you, Matt, but boo, the Patriots, boo. And you look at, you know, you go online and you look at the polls of, you look who's rooting for which team, and all the New England states are going for the Patriots, and the entire rest of the country is rooting for the Falcons. And then, like you said, the whole Goodell thing, it was pretty sweet when just to silence all the haters.
Oh, you're right. And this is, I mean, the game itself was foul. It was the greatest comeback ever. To me, Brady was already the greatest quarterback ever. Belichick, the greatest coach. It cements that. And it was fabulous. But, you know, there's a lot of things that lay the groundwork to get to this point. And, you know, I wonder, you know, again, that Oakland game, if the Patriots lose, is Tom Brady the starting quarterback the next year? Do the Patriots head in a different direction? I mean, it's all, you know, everything kind of leads up to a certain point, and those early games, the Super Bowl championship, that divisional round, I mean, everything's awesome, but to me, just like the Lego movie, everything it kind of led to this point, and this point is pretty special. 10th championship for the fans here in New England over the last 16 years, which is remarkable, and of course, the 5th Super Bowl championship for the Patriots. We'll take a look at the game here in the middle segment of the program. I also talked with Paul Pierce for a little bit yesterday at the TD Garden, and we'll talk with Marcus Smart as well in the middle segment of the show. Back with more after this on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. This segment of the show presented by the Prescription Center. New England Patriots are Super Bowl champions for the 5th time. This victory, though, their most improbable, considering the deficit they had to overcome—a 25-point deficit, including being down 19 points entering the fourth quarter of play. Patriots erased that 25-point deficit en route to a 34-28 overtime victory against the Falcons in Super Bowl 51. Tom Brady, of course, his performance incredible. He won the Super Bowl MVP with 466 yards and 2 touchdowns. James White had 3 touchdowns for the Patriots, including one that he ran in from 2 yards away to clinch the victory in the first ever Super Bowl that went into overtime. That was, as I mentioned, White's 3rd touchdown of the day. Patriots finished the game scoring 31 unanswered points. It was Brady and head coach Bill Belichick's 5th Super Bowl victory together. Tom Brady says that the Patriots never lost faith.
Took a lot of great plays, and that's why you play to the end. It's a 60-minute game, and you know, halftime, I'd say we weren't down at all. I mean, we were disappointed in the way we played and knew that we could go out and do a lot better in the second half.
New England tied the game with 57 seconds left in the fourth quarter on White's 1-yard touchdown run and Brady's 2-point conversion to Danny Amendola. Pats outscored the Falcons 19-0 during the fourth quarter. An incredible play during that drive that tied the game was a catch by Julian Edelman, which was bobbled up in the air. He managed to get his hands under the football in an incredible fashion, in one of the great catches in Super Bowl history. Edelman describes that play.
I knew I got it. I knew I had like good feel on it. I didn't know if like maybe a piece of the ball was touching, but I knew that. I don't know what the dang rule is. No one knows what a rule is for a catch is. So, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I got it.
Patriots wide receiver Danny Amendola says he couldn't believe Edelman made that catch on the game tying drive.
Unbelievable, man! It was an awesome catch. I don't know how he did it. Catch of the night. No question. He sparked the whole team. He's a champ.
Patriots running back Garrett Blunt says Tom Brady was 100% the reason for their rally.
We were down 28 to 3, and you know, he orchestrated you know, the greatest, possibly the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. You know, and I was here to watch it. I've been here with him for a couple of years now, for a few years now, and I've seen how he goes about his business.
Patriots wide receiver Chris Hogan says that Tom Brady kept their confidence up even when they were down big.
We just kind of told ourselves that, you know, we got to make some plays. You know, this was going to be one heck of a story, a Super Bowl story, you know, making this comeback. And, you know, we just had to do our job and just make some plays and find a way to win, which we did.
Patriots scoring 31 unanswered points after falling behind by 25 points in this contest, including trailing by 19 going into the fourth quarter of play. Tom Brady and James White were the biggest keys for the Patriots offensively. Brady, 466 yards and two touchdowns. James White had three touchdowns and set a couple Super Bowl records with 14 catches and 110 receiving yards, the most ever for a running back. White also scored the touchdown that helped to tie the game and the touchdown that won it. Here's Tom Brady on White's big day.
James White is just, you know, he's everything you want in a teammate and a football player, and dependable, consistent, durable, the best attitude, brings it every day, and, you know, we just kept going to him. So I think that speaks for itself.
It's obviously, you know, a lot of the drama last night was about Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, who levied unprecedented penalties against the Patriots for their role, which, to my view, is still kind of undetermined in Deflategate. And to me, everybody handled the situation well, and last night at least. And Goodell, I think, was vindictive, and his penalty against Tom Brady was flat out unnecessary for a simple rules violation. You know, I understand the NFL side of things, and a lot of other people feel the cover up was more of the, you know, the penalty than the actual crime itself. But the fact of the matter is that Goodell was accessible. He shook hands. He said the right things. He did the right things. He handled the situation well. Robert Kraft got to say his piece, and Brady said his piece during the game. That was pretty much it. Brady cementing himself as the greatest quarterback of all time, cementing himself, because this game, in my view, did not change the fact that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. Patriots could have lost by 25 points last night, and you know, Brady still is the greatest quarterback of all time. This further cements that legacy. And I just thought the game itself was a great reminder to everybody about life. You don't know what's going to happen when you're down, and you can either give up and say, game's over, let's go to bed, or you can move forward. And, you know, I think that how people watch the game and how they handle the game and how they, you know, talk about the game today is a great indication as to who you are. For me, I thought that things did not look good for the Patriots. I did not expect them to win the game, but I was going to see things through to the conclusion. Some people gave up. Some people said, you know what, there's 60 minutes to a football game. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to root for the Patriots, and I'm going to believe they can still win this game. And there's some people today who thought they were finished and are saying that the Patriots had it the whole time. So, I mean, that's to me, you know, sports is always kind of a great it shows character. And Tom Brady showed his character. He was down, he was upset, but he rallied the team, he believed, and he played the thing through to fruition. And I think that's the great metaphor for life. Belief. Believe in yourself. See things through. And, you know, more often than not, probably in those circumstances, you're going to lose the game. But there's always a chance. And to me, that was a incredible story, and everybody's, you know, in the aftermath, is the greatest, you know, football game ever played. I don't know. I mean, the Patriots had a lot of great Patriots Super Bowl games. You know, everyone's putting that up with the Red Sox winning the World Series in 2004. To me, there's only that's kind of stands alone. Even you can't really touch the 2004 Red Sox World Series championship after 86 years of misery and disappointment. So this was it was an incredible game. Brady's performance in itself kind of stands alone as the I think he probably played the greatest game a football player has ever played. The numbers speak for themselves. The deficit speaks for itself. The magnitude of the game speaks for itself. So, you know, was it the greatest football game ever played? Was it the greatest New England sports moment? It was up there. I don't think there's any question about it. But, you know, the last Super Bowl with Malcolm Butler on the goal line, intercepting a pass to win the Super Bowl, that's pretty special. And, you know, the first Super Bowl championship for the Patriots being 14-point deficits, you know, that was pretty special. And, again, the Red Sox 2004 World Series championship stands alone because most people never thought they would ever see that happen, and there had been 86 years since they'd won it. But last night was, I mean, again, Tom Brady cemented himself as the greatest NFL quarterback ever, and I think the Patriots, you know, again, they've won championships 2 out of 3 years, 5 championships overall for Belichick and Brady. It's remarkable. So on any other sports day in Boston sports history, the biggest story would have been Paul Pierce and his send-off at the TD Garden, which was raucous, love-filled, amazing. The atmosphere in the building throughout the contest was fabulous. Doc Rivers, of course, Celtics head coach for many years, won the championship with the team back in 2008. Let Pierce start. He has not really played at all this year for the Clippers. Gave him 5 minutes to start the game, and I thought that might be all that we saw of Paul Pierce. But things worked out perfectly for the Celtics and their fans. A lead for the Celtics of what ended up being 8 points with Al Horford in the free throw line. Just a few seconds to go in the game gave the opportunity for one of the greatest curtain calls in Boston sports history. As Pierce checked in, had not played in the game since early in the first quarter, and stepped in, took a pass from J.J. Redick up top, and nailed a three-point shot to walk off the parquet floor with a three-point shot. Pierce, in my view, belongs amongst the all-time Celtics greats. So you want to have a Mount Rushmore of Boston Celtics greats. You want to have a all-time starting five. For me, Paul Pierce goes in with that group. He pushes McHale out of the Celtics starting lineup. If you want to talk about the Mount Rushmore, I think that's a little bit debatable, Havlicek or Pierce. But, you know, to me, it's Cousy, Russell, Bird, and then Pierce. Perhaps, you know, as I mentioned, you could make the argument for John Havlicek, and that's a really good argument. Havlicek's one of the great basketball players of all time. But at the very least, he is in the Celtics all-time, you know, starting lineup at that small forward position. Havlicek at the two, and Cousy at the one, Larry Bird at the four, and, of course, Bill Russell at the five. This is what he had to say about his send-off in the Garden.
It was tough, man. Just the fans are awesome. These are best fans in the world. I mean, I never felt anything like this. I truly appreciate my time here. I truly appreciate tonight. Fans really showered me with a lot of love.
Here's Doc Rivers on how things broke down.
And him making that shot, just that's just, I don't know what the heck that is. That only happens like here, or I don't know what that is. I don't know who could sit that long, you know, and walk in on the floor and make a shot.
I also had the great opportunity to talk to Paul Pierce. It was amazing to see how he embraced everyone. Hugs, pictures. He took absolutely everything in throughout the course of this final game for him inside the TD Garden, a place he played for 15 years and grew as a person. We talked about that. And also, if the Celtics are going to see an amended relationship between Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce, who came together to win that 2008 championship. They have not been getting along over the years after Allen went down to Miami and left the other two in Boston. So I had a great opportunity to talk to Paul Pierce yesterday at his big day in Boston.
Can you describe your mindset here today? Like, you're taking in every hug, every person you see. What is kind of the mindset for you going in today?
Well, I'm just really appreciative of the people here, man. You know, I'm appreciative of the people, the staff members that are still around here, you know, the fans that I recognize that's been around here. You know, I appreciate them just as much as they appreciate me. And that's the beauty of all this. These, like I said before, the fans, the people around here who worked here had a chance to see me grow from a boy into a man, and through my ups and downs, and you know, we just appreciate each other's journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all it is. And now it's time that we're coming toward the end. We all just reminisce, tell the stories, and think about, you know, the good and you know, where we came from to this point to where we are today.
How much have you thought about the legacy piece and how much and how you want to be remembered by the fans, the people around here, and what they should remember about you?
Man, you know, the thing I want people around here to remember is, you know, not only did I give them everything that I could on the basketball side, but, you know, I think the people here in this city know that I embrace this city like my own.
Yeah.
You know, the way I went into the community, the way I gave back to the city through my foundation, through whether it's like toy drive or turkey giveaways, you know, I went out in the community and I gave back like this was my own. And, you know, I embraced this like it was my own, and it is my community. So it was more than just a basketball thing. It was what I was able to do in the community. I embraced every part of it by giving back, you know, whether it be computer rooms or health programs. You know, it was stuff that I cared about doing. And I think, you know, people in this city appreciate what I was able to do, not only on the court, but off the court, too.
Do you see yourself kind of in the Mount Rushmore or the all-time starting five of the Celtics franchise?
You know, I don't know where I'll be placed on that list. You know, that's not up to me to decide. You know, I just, you know, did the work I came to work and did the best I can do. And, you know, that's for media or the people who are head of the Mount Rushmore. I don't know who that is to make that decision. To make that decision.
Who do you think is the guy that kind of bridges the gap and brings everybody together with you and Ray and KG? Is it Doc? Is it Danny? Is it somebody else?
I don't know. I think it's going to come from one of us. I mean, I think we just going to reach out, you know, maybe like I was saying, Sherrod, maybe we can get Ray on Area 21 or something, man. We all meet up over there.
Of course, talking about Kevin Garnett's a new career on TV with TNT and their NBA coverage. Paul Pierce right there. Talked with Austin Rivers as well about the impact that Pierce has had on him and on the Clippers in a role this year where he's not really playing. He's just kind of enjoying the last go-around, waving and talking to fans, catching up with people, and also mentoring the young players on a pretty good Clippers team.
Talk about what it's been like playing with Paul now and the influence that he's had on this team.
Playing with him, you know, obviously just – you're just playing with someone who's done it all before, so it's just when he talks, you know, a lot of guys talk, you know what I mean? I mean, you just know whatever he says he's actually done before. It just means more, you know what I mean? So it's been pretty cool, you know, this is last year, and it's been pretty cool to see him interact with people everywhere we go, on the East Coast especially. It's the last game he's playing there, so it's always been cool. You know, next is going to be, you know, Toronto, then it'll be the Garden, you know, the Madison Square Garden. It's been pretty cool.
What do you see as having been his impact on the game overall? Because your dad was saying he's not the flashiest guy, but he's a guy who did
it. Yeah, he's always been a guy who's hit, you know, the key fundamentals down, though. You know what I mean? Although he didn't, you know, he wasn't the quickest or most athletic. He hit everything that a lot of those guys don't have. So he was effective in his own way. Probably underrated, probably one of the best footworks. One of the best footwork ever, as far as just a wing player. So,
in some ways, you know, is he a guy who young players should look up to more because of that? Because you can look up to, you know, Blake and other guys who have just, you know, sheer athleticism. But Pierce, you can actually, you know, take things from and learn, you know, the spacing, the footwork.
Oh, yeah, he definitely has a lot of that. And like I said, he's extremely gifted with that as well. I mean, he was an athlete in his own right, but obviously Blake is you know, extreme athlete. But, yeah, you know, I think it's just a mix of both. You know, I think you definitely look up to guys like Paul, but there's nothing wrong looking up to a guy like Blake, man, because you see the handle he has. He has a handle like a point guard. So, I mean, he has a lot of skill in himself.
And finally, just talk about kind of how he's handled this last season and the fact that, you know, he's going to the Hall of Fame. He's a legend and all that. He hasn't played a lot this year, but he seems like he's been very dedicated to helping you guys.
Yeah, he didn't come back to play, though. You know, he's done everything that he's wanted to do. He's done everything he's wanted to do in his career. You know, this is just a thing just for him to have fun, just to relax his last year. He doesn't want to have to worry about playing, scouting. He's ready if we put him in. If not, you know, Paul's just here to just help, be a leader. And not even really a leader, just to be here. Just if you need him, he'll talk to you. You know, I mean, he's not the guy that's vocal. in the locker room. Paul's just kind of kept to himself, but, you know, if you need him, he's there. You know, he knows what he's talking about. And he's just been here just, I think, just to have fun and relax. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a lot of fun in practice, gets there early, plays one-on-one with the rookies. Like, he's just had a good time, you know what I mean? And he deserves that. You know, most guys don't get to have an NBA season like that. He gets to just because of what he's done. So it's been pretty cool.
Let's look at the Celtics now, and the Celtics continue to be all about Isaiah Thomas. They are a really good basketball team right now, a team that is really pushing themselves into the conversation about contending for a championship. Good teams, bad teams, they dispatch of all of them, and they find themselves at 33-18 right now, only two games back of the Cavs for the best record in the Eastern Conference. And again, Isaiah Thomas, night in, night out. Yesterday against the Clippers, kind of an off game for Isaiah Thomas. 28 points in that contest. But you know, prior to that, each night you're penciling him in for 35 to 44 points per game. And that is flat out remarkable. Talked with Marcus Smart about the impact that Isaiah has had on the Celtics and his teammates.
I think Isaiah's numbers speak for themselves. You know, it's not so much as us looking for Isaiah. It's the fourth quarter looking for Isaiah, not us. You know, and it's this type of moment where, you know, it's something that he has a battle where it's fourth quarter that, you know, he gets into a different mode. And when the guy gets hot, you just got to keep feeding him.
Even though maybe looking for him to score, how do you try to impact the game as a group in order to create an environment where he can be successful?
Well, we know, you know, there's going to be some times where Isaiah's probably not going to be able to save us in the fourth. You know, other guys have to step up. So as long as we do our jobs, you know, by knocking down shots for him or getting open for him or getting to the rim, it'll create more space for him to work and keep teams honest on him.
How impressed with you, you know, what Isaiah is doing in terms of scoring consistently, or is it just kind of you step back and expect, you know, 30 to 40 points at this point?
No, it's still impressive to us. You know, sometimes we catch ourselves looking and watching and kind of becoming a fan because he's so small and, you know, the things that he's doing, you just be looking like, wow. You know, I can't believe he did that. You know, at the end of the game, you can't believe he had that much. You know, so, but, you know, Isaiah worked for that, and he's a great player, and he deserved it.
Is he a guy who, like, it feels like he has 44 points? And there's some guys it's just so effortless where you look at the end of the game, it's 25. But the way he earns it, does it you remember all those points?
Yeah, you definitely remember. He earns it. You know, teams make him earn it. You know, so, you know, it's nothing where you can just say, you know, well, he got lucky. You know, he goes out and he gets it. You know, he takes it. So, you know, it's nice where he comes out and sometimes you like, you know, you had 40, you had 50. And there's some nights where you like, you know, he had 40 and 50, but that's Isaiah for you.
And Marcus Smart right there on the impact of Isaiah Thomas. Also caught up with Celtics forward Jonas Jerebko to talk about this two-month stretch the Celtics have been on. Find themselves at 33-18 and just two games back at the top spot in the Eastern Conference.
Over the last 2 months, the Boston Celtics have been on an incredible run. Isaiah Thomas has been on an incredible run. When you look at what this team has been able to do, what do you point to? Because the team hasn't even been whole over that period of time. There's been a lot of injuries here and there.
Isaiah has been great. I mean, he's our scorer. He's our heart. But, you know, we're trying to play around him, getting him as much ball as possible, especially in the fourth quarter. I mean, he's been amazing. You know, so I feel like we're just starting to come together. We're starting to realize what we're good at. We're starting to play defense first and foremost, starting to rebound in the ball a little bit better, and just trying to play good basketball.
The sick thing is that you look at the course of the season, and you guys have never really been whole except for, you know, 5 or 10 games throughout the course of the year. And Avery is such a fabulous all-around player. He's been missing from this stretch. Yeah. So you're right. I mean, it seems like this team has, since you've gotten here, since Isaiah's gotten here, the ascension has just continued throughout the course of time, and you guys have gotten better and better.
I think that's one of our keys. You know, same guys. We're starting to know each other. We've been here for 2.5 years now. We're starting to build something. And like you said, AB's been injured a little bit here, and I think that's just scary for other teams to see that we're still playing good basketball without him. We missed Al a little bit. So I think we're just coming together. I think we're just getting better and better. So like I said, other teams should be scared.
Early on, obviously a lot of predictions and so forth about this team going to the Eastern Conference Finals, being the second best team in the East, and struggled a little bit out of the gate. And guys were talking a lot about, you know, where they thought they're at as a team, and that they're close to being there. Yeah. Did that ever feel real at the beginning of the year when people were talking about how, you know, good this team could be, and now does it start to, you know, sink in that you guys are one of the best teams in the league?
Yeah, we don't really listen to the talk. Like you said, we had some injuries in the beginning of the year too. Al coming in new, right. And then we missed him. He's a big part of our team. So we really don't listen to the talk. We're just trying to concentrate on basketball, and we know we're a good team, and we got even better than we were last year. So, you know, it's fun to see us win games, but, you know, we're only halfway there. So – We just got to keep winning, keep grinding out wins.
Do you shake your head at Isaiah's performances? Because it starts to get routine. 38, 44, yeah. 42. I mean, it's you pencil him in some point between 34 and 44 points a night, and that's where he's at over the last month. I mean, what is that like from a teammate's perspective to see that type of unworldly performance? Yeah.
I mean, he's been amazing. I mean, this season for him has been great. And we're just trying to support him and like I said, trying to get him the ball in the fourth quarter. And, you know, I mean, it's amazing to see such an offensive player as he is. I mean, scoring the ball at his size, I mean, it's amazing. So we're just trying to build on him and trying to build off of that and just keep winning games. I mean, he's been great for us.
Father, you mentioned supporting him. What does that mean, you know, particularly on the offensive side? I mean, how do you go about creating an environment where he can be successful?
Move the ball, set screens, you know. If they're doubling him, you know, we're finding somebody else and then going to set a screen again, just get the ball, dribble handoff, spread the floor for him, just read what the other team does, you know, because he's been unguardable.
Are you kind of the perfect, you know, complementary player to him out there because the way you set screens, one of the best aspects of your game? You can stick the three-point shot, move it. I mean, does he need those bigs who can do a lot of different things?
I feel like I just get better and better. Like we got traded here at the same time. Right. I'm just trying to read his game. And like I said, I'm trying to get him the ball, dribble handoffs, pass it, so go set a screen for him. You know, whatever it is I need to do, I'll do.
That's Jonas Drebko, and of course, WKXL, your home for Boston Celtics basketball. This segment of The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics, brought to you by the Prescription Center. More with Matt after this. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. So the question, Matt, it's being asked is, you know, where is, you know, Tom Brady in the pantheon of sports, the performances, the legendary performances he's had, and where does he rank all time? And to me, you know, it's difficult to compare. People say, well, he's the greatest athlete ever. He's the greatest football player ever. It's difficult to compare sports. So I think there's like certain groups that the players, you know, go in, like the all-time greatest superstars, the Larry Birds, the Michael Jordans, you know, the Tom Brady's. That's where he's at. And he is amongst the greatest champions and the greatest players of all time. Is he better than Michael Jordan? Is he better than Kobe Bryant? Is he better than Larry Bird or Derek Jeter? Or whomever? I don't know, but he's right there. Put Tim Duncan in there too.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely apples and oranges once you start crossing different sports, but he's the upper echelon. You know, he's on a different level as far as athlete, sports, superstar goes. I put him on the level of any of those guys you just mentioned.
The Mickey Mantles, if we go back in the day, and I think he's passed, you know, even Joe Montana and others in the NFL, but they're certainly, you know, the legends of the game as well. And want to close, though, here by talking about Paul Pierce. And The sentiment and feeling inside the Garden on Sunday was amazing. Chanting the entire game for Pierce. They wanted him to get a curtain call encore, and things worked out, you know, just so the Celtics were up by 7 points without Horford on the line and just a couple seconds to go in the game. They put Pierce on the floor, and then Pierce hits a three-pointer. He hadn't been in the game for like 2 hours, and he steps off the bench with to hit a three-pointer to walk off the court in Boston. And to me, he is kind of, you know, even despite the love and everything thrown in his direction, to a large extent, I think he's kind of underrated because of the time period that he played and with all these championships and the sports stars in Boston, Ortiz, Tom Brady. You look at the numbers, and he's, you know, inching closer to John Havlicek on the all-time points scored. I think that he's in the conversation, you know, to be in the Celtics all-time starting five, perhaps on the Mount Rushmore of the Celtics. I think you put Russell, Cousy, Bird are kind of on their own, and then Havlicek's one of the greatest players of all time, so he might find his way on Mount Rushmore as well. But I think Pearson and Havlicek are, and to some people this would be sacrilege, but I think that they're kind of comparable in terms of their impact and their numbers and, you know, how they wore the Celtic green.
He was there for 15 years. That's pretty special when you think about it. Just anybody who can stay with an organization for that long in this day and age with the way free agency is unbelievable. And you know, he brought a championship to the Celtics after, man, I mean, they weren't very good for a long time.
Right.
And yeah, he was part of a lot of those teams, but he, you know, kind of was the anchor that they built around when they brought in Garnett and Ray Allen and created the big three. And everybody remembers those back-to-back finals and the championship they won. And then I loved his quote where I think he was just joking, but, you know, his final gift to Boston was that trade with New Jersey that got them, you know, all those assets, the draft picks and everything. I thought that was hilarious, but it's true. I mean, he's the gift that keeps on giving for when it comes to Boston basketball fans.
Yeah,
and totally deserving of you know, all the love and accolades he received in his final game.
Yeah, a Celtics reporter, young reporter, asked him after he's done talking. He's like, "So you gonna drop 48 tonight?" He's like, "Yeah, like 48 seconds." And yeah, he gets yeah.
Every basketball player gets smacked in the face with mortality.
Right.
And it's a humbling experience as you get towards the twilight of your career. And it becomes painfully obvious. You just physically can't do the things you once did. And you got all these young athletic guys coming at you. And it's definitely a humbling experience and one that is best dealt with a sense of humor.
And Pierce hit so many clutch shots for the Celtics, and that's why it was really symbolic, in my view, that he hit that three and then got to walk off the court at the end of his
career. Yeah, that was awesome. That's like the ending of his 30 right there.
Right. I mean, that's like the storybook-type ending. And granted, you know, the Celtics played off him a little bit, and it was the end of the game, whatever. But you still have to hit the shot. I mean, you have to hit the three-point shot. And knowing what it all means, and he hit the shot, and to me, that's pretty incredible. Matt, as always, appreciate you joining us for the program. We'll talk, I'm sure, more about the Super Bowl next week. Perhaps we'll do that for the next, say, 4 to 8 months, but we'll see. Talk to you later.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
It's The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.